From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. Here in the age of social media, right? We're recording this, as longtime listeners know, on a virtual interface, right? We're mentally and soulfully together, but not physically together, and that may be the case for some time. However, technology is allowing us to feel closer, right? And this, the crazy thing is, this stuff is so cheap now. We're talking about the proliferation of cheap imaging technology. You guys remember when not everyone could afford a camera editing software and stuff like that?
I mean, hell, I remember when not every phone had a camera on it, where it was like, who's got a digital camera? Go find one. You know, now it's like a non-issue, you know?
Well, and if you were going to take a video with one of those, it was this tiny little MPEG file that you'd end up getting. Even though you had this powerful camera, the digital camera you could use, your video was so terrible.
Oh, yeah. And you just had a nice curated set of pixels that would move in what appeared to look like a face.
Exactly.
But now we have, you know, now it's so affordable to buy these things. And on balance, that's a good thing. But combine that with the massive growth of social media and the massive growth, this is something you people don't talk about as often, the massive growth of archival capacity. This means, if you want to be sweet and nostalgic about it, that our days of cherishing a few like glamour photographs from your local photography studio or a few expensive Polaroids, those days are all but gone. Now you can post photos of yourself, your friends, or strangers, and you can post them anywhere you please. There are some laws about it, but they're not really good, because legislation has always been technology's slower sibling. And so those laws often don't have a lot of teeth to them. And with the rise of all this technology and the rise of all these capabilities, we also see the rise of technology that is exclusively meant to exploit the vast amount of stuff that we've been making just from like LiveJournal, Tumblr, MySpace, Friendster, Facebook, all, you know, all the hits, all that jazz. So what do you guys think? I mean, optimists and pessimists have a different idea of what this means for the world.
Well, yes, yeah, so on the optimist side, I would just say the number of photographs and captured memories I have of my son is probably more, you know, it's certainly thousands of times greater than that which exists for me as a child and my growth, my, you know, my parents, and then going back and back and back and back. It's just exponentially a larger amount of memories that are captured throughout his life, my son. So that's great. That's wonderful. We can look back on those, you know, until the machines all turn off or we lose electricity. Those images will exist for my family and people that care about me and my son.
But on the flip side of that, Matt, you know, like folks like my mom, for example, she doesn't consider those real. Like, she's like, if it's not printed out and it's not in a frame on my mantle, then that is not a real memory, which is interesting because to your point about like the machines turning off, there's all these companies now that will take your Instagram photos and print them out and send you framed copies of them, and the proliferation of like Instax cameras and like more analog technology is sort of a response, almost a backlash to this over digitization of like our memories and our collective kind of, you know, unconscious really in a way with all the stuff that's out there. It's like there's this sense of, is it really ours once it's out there in the ether? And I think that's a big part of today's question.
Yeah. Who owns the art, the artist or the audience? It's a very old question, but it's one that has continually been relevant, right?
And yeah, but the other question, Ben, is it art or is it just data?
Right. There we go. That's a good distinction. It's a tough distinction to make. Optimists are saying, this is great, you guys. The world's going to be a safer place. And think how convenient everything's going to be. You'll never lose your favorite photo again, you know, and criminals can no longer disappear into a crowd. And then pessimists say, you know, in a world beyond privacy, every person is monitored continually throughout their lives. Your image is logged countless times. And all the data from that image and all the other images of you, it's analyzed, it's bought and sold without your knowledge or your permission, a world careening towards sci-fi dystopia, pre-crime, pre-existing medical conditions, advertising so invasive and so bespoke that it might as well be reading your mind because it's doing something very close to that. But before you get all Blade Runner and Minority Report, let's start closer to the beginning. There is a revolution happening in the world of facial recognition right now, and its name is Clearview AI. Here are the facts.
Yeah, I mean, the first time I heard of Clearview AI was on a recent NPR piece where the founder was interviewed. So this is a very relatively new company, at least to me. But as far as the background, it is a research tool that is being used by law enforcement specifically. And the company, it makes it very clear that this is something that's designed exclusively for use by law enforcement in order to identify perpetrators and victims of crimes. It's a little bit on the vague side, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, we have to be honest. That's the high level, like, log line or pitch from the company on its own website. So we can't blame them for not wanting to get too into the weeds about algorithms. But if we look at how it actually works, we can get a high level understanding. It's a startup. It has a massive database of faces, just specifically faces, somewhere north of 3 billion images. And as we're recording this, that number is likely still growing. So that number is going to be a little bit higher by the time you get to the end of this episode.
Yeah, and it was the gentleman who founded the startup, Hon Ton Thot, was who I heard interviewed on, I believe it was The Daily, actually. So if you want to hear directly from this gentleman's mouth what he believes the mission of this technology and this company is, it's a very fascinating interview that kind of delves into some of the slippery slope sides of this technology that we're going to get into. But as far as the end users concerned, which in this case would be law enforcement, because currently this is not available to civilians, you take a picture and it identifies who that person is. Simple as that. By matching it with all of this information that they've collected, and they've collected it, you know, not through any really nefarious means. It's all that information that we talked about that's already out there. All they've got to do is reach out and grab it.
It's a search engine for faces, and it sounds innocuous at first. If it was The Daily, I think I listened to that interview. But I also listened to an excellent interview you sent, Matt, an extended CNN Business conversation. So if you want to see them visual, like if you want to see the founder using the app a couple of different times, I think he does it on himself. He does it on the interviewer, and then he does it on one of their producers. And it seems to work. It's not a sensationalized thing either, at least the way they're presenting it.
Yeah, but we're gonna maybe talk about that a little more. Just if you do want to look at that video. It's an interview with Donnie O'Sullivan with CNN Business, and it is, we're going to reference it several times in this episode.
Yeah. So like you said, Noel, Clearview has taken this from publicly available sources, your Facebooks, your YouTubes, your Venmos, which yes, are publicly available. And the federales and local law enforcement admit that they only have a limited knowledge of how the app actually works mechanically, the nuts and bolts of it. But they do confirm they've already used it to help solve shoplifting cases, identity theft cases, credit card fraud, child abuse even, and even several homicides. This technology goes, by the way, far beyond anything constructed by Silicon Valley giants or anything officially created or used by the U.S. government.
yeah, in that interview that we just mentioned, Juan mentions that they had this image or this video file of a child abuse incident, and the person of interest walks past in the background at one point, and there were only two usable frames of this person's face. And again, like, imagine in the background of a video, they were able to take a still from that video of this person's face and identify him through other social media websites where they've got all this data from, and make an arrest on this person. Like, that is, it's mind blowing that you could do that, and thank goodness that they were able to do that. But it's the implication of being able to do that in that one instance and then applying it across everything is what makes it feel a little scary. Because
for the critics.
Well, yeah, for the critics. Well, for the people who are looking at it big picture. So if you're thinking about it just in a law enforcement application, then it's amazing, right? And it's the best thing ever. But if you apply it to everything, to everyone at all times outside of law enforcement, then eesh.
Well, and just strictly on like a technological level, it's fascinating and clearly a huge leap forward in this kind of technology. Because, I mean, we've seen these videos they're talking about, these grainy surveillance videos or ATM camera videos. I mean, it's hard to, as a human being, even if you knew that person, it'd be difficult for you to identify them. So this, using this algorithm and you know, analyzing, comparing it to all these different subjects, I imagine using points of articulation, like on the faces and the structures or whatever, it's able to come back with positive matches. I think that's really fascinating and a really, you know, pretty innovative use of technology for sure, as a nerd speaking, you know, exclusively on that level. But you're right, Matt, when you start to apply it on a larger scale, it gets really 1984-ish and kind of scary.
I appreciate that point, Noel. It's something that's going to come into play later, and it may surprise some of our fellow listeners to learn a little bit more about this technology and some of the other topics that you raised there. I want to say this. Their pitch is very law enforcement-based on the website. They're quick to point out, they're quick to claim, I should say, that they've helped law enforcement track down hundreds of at-large criminals. They mention the things that make people very emotional, like child abusers, terrorists, sex traffickers. But they also say this technology is used to help exonerate the innocent and identify victims. And it seems that they might be embellishing a little bit in terms of the degree of help they're providing, but they are providing help. The authorities have used this. It's happening now. They've done so without much public scrutiny, or they were for most of 2019 doing so without much public scrutiny. In early 2020, Clearview said more than 600 different law enforcement agencies started using our app just in the last year, but they refused to provide more specifics because they're very protective of their client base. So the badger is out of the bag, metaphorically. This is not a what-if scenario. This exists, this is in use right now, and that means it can therefore be used on you and every single person you know. Is that a bad thing? Here's the interesting part. This technology is maybe innovative in application, but very much not innovative in theoretical terms. It has been possible for a while. People in the tech world knew about this possibility for a long, long time. And some tech companies, this is so weird, tech companies barely ever do this. Some tech companies, like giants, said, you know, we can build something like this. They realized it years ago, and they actually decided to stop researching it. They decided not to deploy this because of the massive potential privacy concerns. Even Google wouldn't do it.
It's like that thing in the Batman. Which one is it? It's the one with Heath Ledger where there's that technology that turns every cell phone in the world into a listening device. And, you know, he has to destroy it after using it once because it's just such problematic tech that, you know, Morgan Freeman's character basically builds a safeguard device that causes it to, you know, destroy itself. Because that's the thing, Ben, about the badger being out of the bag. Once it's out, you can say all day long this is just for law enforcement, but like you said, Ben, the capability's been there. So who's to stop somebody from doing a kind of copycat version of this once it's out there and available to check out, even if it's only, quote unquote, just for law enforcement, you know? I mean, so were certain kinds of radios and tasers and things like that, you know? And people in the public have those now too, don't they?
It's a very good point, yeah. I mean, back in 2011, think about how long ago that was, almost 10 years ago, the chairman of Google said facial recognition technology, this kind of stuff that Clearview is doing, is the one technology that Google is holding back on because we feel like it could be used in a very bad way. And now, this is a fascinating point here. Some cities have even preemptively banned police from using any kind of facial recognition technology. And one of the most notable examples of a city that's banned this, San Francisco, at the very heart of technological innovation here in the U.S. So they definitely knew what was coming. Their lawmakers, their constituents gave it a big nope. And here's the other thing. Clearview AI, if we think about the future of it, the code behind it is fascinating.
If anyone out there has been watching the latest season of Westworld, you may be familiar with the glasses that several characters wear. And just think about that. If you are familiar with that, think about that as we describe what this thing can do.
Yeah, think about it carefully because, you see, Clearview AI, the code behind it isn't just facial recognition. It also includes programming language that would allow this tool to pair with AR or augmented reality glasses. What does this mean? This means that if the sunglasses I'm wearing now were functioning with Clearview AI, I could walk down the street and I could identify almost every person I saw. And not just other pictures of them, but breadcrumbs that would tell me where they lived, you know, what their children's identities were, what their name was, what they did for a living. And start, it would automatically play the 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. Actually, that's a really great idea for an add-on game for these glasses. You can see how close people are to Kevin Bacon. You heard it here first. But it's scary because then you would see Matt Frederick, and then you would know his friends, Paul Mission Control Deckett, Noel Brown, Ben Bolin, and you would know everyone he worked with. It gets real sticky really quickly. And can you hear the feds drooling in the background? Is that just my cat? I don't know at this point, but that's the high level look.
Or spies. I mean, just any spy. Imagine that.
Well, you guys, I mean, I think we're forgetting an even more classic sci-fi example of this, the kind of heads-up display you'd see in a movie like The Terminator, you know, where you're seeing from the perspective of this, you know, assassin robot who's looking for a target and being able to see who everybody is and get all these stats and metrics. And you could apply this to any number of, let's call them parameters surrounding an individual. You could then go deeper with this and start pulling stats from their social media and be served up with information about their height and or you know, whatever, like any, like let's say they have pre-existing condition or something like that, or they have some kind of, you know, what's the word I'm looking for, like compromise on them. You could even go deeper and find pictures of them, like maybe smoking when they've claimed that they don't smoke and they are, you know, committing insurance fraud. I don't know. I'm just saying there's all kinds of ways you could deep dive, scrape this data and apply these points to an individual and then get that information served up to you very quickly in this display.
And optimists are so quick to point out the potential benefits of Clearview AI and facial recognition in general. It's true, there are benefits. Pessimists, however, claim the disadvantages here in this specific case, far outweigh any of those benefits. Outweigh them, in fact, by a vast and disturbing margin. We'll pause for word from our sponsor and return to dive down the rabbit hole. Here's where it gets crazy. There are a ton of problems. We've done some foreshadowing on these, but let's talk a little bit more about them. First, you know, you can categorize these, right? So first, there are not many strong operational restrictions on how this technology is actually used. That means that it can not only be easily misused, but that there will probably not be repercussions for people, at least not legal repercussions.
It's like a point you made earlier, Ben, off mic. It's like when you used to go into those tobacco shops and, you know, you are not allowed to refer to certain smoking apparatuses as bongs. They are water pipes exclusively because that absolves the distributor, the retailer, of any responsibility if you choose to use them in an illegal manner. It's the same thing. It's like saying, whatever you do with my thing is up to you. I know it's designed exclusively for a legal purpose. It's a real sticky situation, isn't it? Because I mean, it not only puts all of the burden on the user, it absolves the creator of any kind of responsibility at all. Or does it? Do those things hold up?
Hey, buddy, that's a tobacco water pipe. All right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. saying something like that, the way the founder did in that interview with CNN, where he was just saying, you know, the thing says, just use it in this way. It's we've seen it over and over and over again. There are a couple of good things that he does speak about in that CNN business interview. And one of the major things, you know, if you put it at the top, it's that the software costs around $50,000 to have a license for a, you know, for a department or something
for two years.
And so at least there's a buy-in level there that just your average person, if they're obtaining it legally, wouldn't be able to use. And then there are, you know, ways to verify if, you know, an end user is actually, if that license is actually that person they should be using it. That's good. And the other thing is, if you're a manager within the software of a licensee of this software, you get audits of every time the software has been used, which is really nice. So at least there could be some oversight to it, and they could check to see if you are, quote, using it in a way they're not supposed to.
There's an example of that. I think that will come into play here later, which is it's pretty weird. It's a little spooky. But I want to go back to that warning. It's literally something. It's like that old FBI VHS tape warning that we mentioned in an earlier episode. You go on to the homepage essentially of the app, which you can use on desktop or you can use on your phone, and basically all it says is like, don't use this in a bad way. And it's like as effective as those tags on mattresses that say, don't remove this tag, or the little note on your box of Q-tips that's like, hey, don't put these in your ear. I know it feels awesome. And I know that's what everybody does with it, but don't put them in your ear. And then, like you said, Noel, that absolves them, right?
Or the warning about seizures at the beginning of when you start up your PlayStation. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, okay, maybe I get seizures, but I'm going to roll the dice because I sure want to play me some Borderlands 3, you know?
Yeah, because, you know, now that I think about it, we might be in a bit of a glass house situation here, my friends, because our show literally starts with a warning that says you can turn back now. We're not as bad as Q-tips.
You can. You can turn back now. That's definitely as is our prerogative to follow said warnings and not stick Q-tips in our ears. But who wants to do that? What are you going to use them for? Like putting on eyeshadow? I mean, I don't know. Like,
the back of your ear.
Really?
That's what you're supposed to do.
Do you need a Q-tip for that? Can't you just use like a tissue?
Some people are living wild, man. I don't know what to tell you about
Q-tips are
safety.
Literally probes. I don't know. Anyway, I just feel like they're very clearly designed to shove in your ear, and it does feel great. But yeah, it can it's pretty scary when you pull out some blood, you know, just saying.
So, yes, I've never done that, actually. I'm gonna start trying. No, gotten blood, like gone in for wax, out with blood. But, you know, maybe I'm just fortunate. I want to bring up something that is possible with this software and just how it uses it before we jump into the next thing we're going to talk about. And that's just that when your face ends up on a social media website somewhere, even if you did not take that picture, even if you were in the background of a selfie that someone took at Bonnaroo, let's say, or something like that, your face is still searchable with facial recognition software if it is visible in the background of an image, if you're in a crowd. And if anywhere you are, anywhere you've been, where a photograph has been taken, where you can, are visible somewhere in the background, this thing, ClearView AI, very much likely, has that image within its database, and your face will be recognizable to it. Just let's put that there.
So it doesn't matter if you're on social media.
Exactly.
Guys, devil's advocate here. Isn't that one of the situations where if you're in public, you're sort of giving up that right to privacy? Or if you go to a Bonnaroo, there's usually signs that said when you pass these gates, you are subject to being filmed, etc. And that's usually for more like documentary purposes of the festival. But I would think it would also apply if you're in public and you're caught on, you know, one of these millions of little surveillance devices that people carry around with them. Is that fair game? Can you sue over misuse of your image?
I wouldn't have thought so.
I'm certainly not arguing about, you know, the legality of it. I'm just saying the reality of wherever you go, if there is a camera taking a picture, whether it's CCTV generally wouldn't show up in one of these things unless it was placed into the system.
At the risk of sounding too, I don't know, too extreme about this, maybe too prescient, I think for people concerned about this, the best way to handle it, which is maddening, is to apply some of the rules that we apply to guns to cameras. So you always assume a gun is loaded, right? You never want to point it at you. So always assume a camera is recording. And if you don't want to be, with that assumption, if you don't want to be in the footage or in the photo, then don't have it pointed at you. You guys remember, I was very uncomfortable with Pokemon Go when it came out. And I was like, no, they're putting these AR little cute things to collect because you're filming. You're filming for them. And you guys were like, Ben, Big Brother does not give the faintest hint of a about Charizards or whatever, right? But still, that stuff freaks me out, you know?
Well, no, but we did a whole story about that company, Niantic, and like how it had roots in intelligence gathering. I mean, you're not wrong, Ben. And I remember that. And we'd be out hanging out, and people would be doing their little capturing their Pokemons, and they'd be on your cell phone or something, and you would like cover your face. And that is your prerogative to do. And I completely understand where you're coming from, because it's like with the whole Zoom phenomenon that we're using it right now. You can turn off that camera. As far as you're concerned, where it doesn't show it to the group, but I guarantee you it's still capturing what's going on and storing it somewhere. So, you know, it's a great technology. It works real well, which is why it's having this moment right now, but I just wouldn't trust it too implicitly, you know?
You know the best technology? It's what Ben and
I use this guy.
It's a sticker or some tape. Just go bloop. At all times.
Yeah, but that's still a low-tech hack, but you have to do it because this stuff can be weaponized. And there's a guy named Eric Goldman at the High Tech Law Institute at Santa Clara University. I like the way he put it. He said, the weaponization possibilities of this are endless. Imagine a rogue law enforcement officer who wants to stalk someone that they want to hit on later, or maybe a foreign government is doing similar to what you described, Noel. They're digging up secrets about people to blackmail them or to throw members of an opposition party in jail. This stuff can happen. And you know, Clearview is also notoriously secretive, even now. That's the second big issue. It leaves a lot of critics ill at ease. We know some stuff because of some excellent research from earlier reporters. Let me tell you guys this weird story. So there's there was a New York Times journalist who was working on a story about Clearview that really brought it to international attention. Mm-hmm. And while this journalist is working with Clearview, is trying to do this story, Clearview isn't really answering him. They're like ducking attempts to contact via text, email, phone call. And so this reporter knows that a lot of law enforcement agencies have Clearview access. And so this reporter asks some contacts in the police department to run his photo through the app. And they do a couple times. So the first approach, the first thing he learns about Clearview approaching outside forces is not when they come to him. It's when they go to the police that he worked with. And they ask the police, hey, are you talking to the media? How shady is that?
Wow. Right? Yeah, that is, whoa.
They have an explanation, right?
Oh, absolutely. And just really quickly, that's the piece that was on the Daily, because the Daily is affiliated with the New York Times. So this was after the fact of this reporter, whose name I'm trying to find, had done all this research and gone through this whole runaround to even get a sit down. The reporter eventually found the office, and it was like very shady. Like there weren't that many people there. It was a skeleton crew, and finally got access to the founder. But that is all, described in great detail on that piece by the Daily. I highly recommend checking it out.
Yeah, Cashmere Hill, the secretive company that might end privacy as we know it, is the Times article. Yeah, I like what you're saying about when Hill finally figured out where the company was. Originally on LinkedIn, they just had like one employee listed, and it turned out to be a pseudonym or a fake name that the founder was using. So they're aware of the dangers here, but. But when they did eventually speak to the reporter, they had reasonable explanations for both of these things. First, the founder said, look, we were avoiding speaking to the media, not because we're like super villains or something. It's because we are a tiny startup. And a lot of times when you're a tiny startup, you're in stealth mode, right? And that makes sense because the NDAs on those things are pretty ironclad. You don't want anyone to scoop you. And then he additionally said, here's why we talked to the police about your search terms. We actually monitor all the searches that are done because we want to make sure that they're being used correctly. In other words, you know, we want to make sure nothing like there's never a situation where a police officer is jilted by a romantic partner, and then they find out their ex has a new lover, and they're like, well, I'm going to find out about this. God, I'm even afraid to make up a name because I don't want to put it out there. Marcus McGillicuddy. Oof, that's swinging a miss.
Funny thing about that, though, Ben, is like you don't even need technology this robust to dig into somebody that closely removed from, you know, a person you really know. They're probably already like posting, tagging each other on Instagram posts, and you just, you know, go and just do a couple clicks and you're there. But no, it's just a really good point, and that's what set off those alarm bells. But yeah, the way it's described in the Daily piece, it felt very like, okay, A, they know they're onto something, and B, they don't want to be found. And I can see to your point, Ben, the whole startup mode. They don't want to get scooped. They don't want anybody stealing their proprietary technology and trying to misuse it or, you know, create a copycat kind of version of it. So that does make sense. But just it's the whole thing is a little strange. But this app, Clearview claims, is up to security industry standards in terms of, I guess, in terms of, you know, hackability or like firewall security or, you know, not being vulnerable to being infiltrated. But who is actually watching them? Who is actually monitoring them? Because it's essentially untested and already being put out into the wild in cases that can have huge effects on people's lives. We'll talk more about that after a quick word from our sponsor. We'll be right back.
Yes, and you know, that was a perfect ad break, Noel. It also gave me time to get this cat out of my recording studio.
I heard you had a little meower.
Yeah. Well, we're all dealing with new coworkers, right?
Can I just do a quick aside, a quick quarantine aside? Had a crisis yesterday. I don't know if I've mentioned on the show that my daughter got a hamster right before quarantine kicked in, and I had to inherit it because her mom was allergic. She found out hamster's name is Hanako, which is like a anime character. But anyway, we realized yesterday afternoon that Hanako is not in her cage. So we had a hamster search party all up in this house, freaking out, and I had just these horrible visions of like finding a dead, decaying hamster, you know, 2 weeks later in my sock drawer or something. So luckily, the little critter found herself back to where she belonged on her own, which was great. Oh,
that's what? Great.
Yeah, she just popped out and was right there. Eden thought it was a sock, and it was turns out it was a hamster. And it wasn't long. I read all these horror stories about how you can only search late at night, and you got to bait it with peanut butter and all this stuff. And she just came right back. It was great.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I had a gerbil in my younger days that escaped and lived and died in the walls of a house. And my tried to move the oven and appliances to get to it, but then we couldn't. And my father thought it would be a good lesson in mortality.
Oh boy. Yeah. I was hoping to avoid that particular lesson for my kid, especially during these trying times when things have been mainly pretty positive for us here at the house.
I'm so glad.
Yeah, thanks, guys. But no, you're right, Ben. Tell us a little bit about the security of this app and the idea of it being tested for, you know, vulnerabilities, right?
Yeah, this is a very interesting point. So a lot of the reporting that came up about Clearview AI came before late February of this year. In late February, Clearview app security was actually tested in the form of a hack. On February 26, the public learned that the company had been breached, their security had been compromised. Hackers had stolen Clearview AI's entire customer list, which was coveted and very much secret, right? The customer list, adding to the troubling facts about this company, the customer list did not jibe with what Clearview had said earlier. It spans thousands of government entities and private businesses across the world. So the U.S. Department of Justice, Immigration and Customs, but it also includes banks. And he does allude to banks in a couple of different interviews, the founders. It also includes Macy's and Best Buy and Interpol. And then on the list, you also see credentialed users at the FBI. You know, we said hundreds of police departments, but here's something very interesting. It also includes users in Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. These are countries that are, you know, not particularly known for their progressive policies or their First Amendment rights. The founder, by the way, says that they're exercising a First Amendment right when they scrape all these images.
Yeah, they're exercising a First Amendment right because they're all publicly available and out there. And if the argument that they make generally is that if Google can scrape all the websites and create search terms for all those things and then allow you to search that information, if you know, YouTube has, you know, when you upload something to YouTube, it's all publicly available. They can scrape all that information for all the data, and then the other companies intertwine and use that data to help each other find other things. Well, hey, why can't we do that too? So we're going to. However, a lot of the scrutiny that's been happening because of that hack that was reported, as well as just the tech in general and how these other giant tech companies, how their data is being used, tech giants like Twitter, Google, and YouTube, same thing, have sent cease and desist letters to Clearview, orders saying, do not do this anymore. And even like because of this, some police departments and other users have just discontinued use of the software. And when the founder, you know, responds to this kind of thing, he says just, you know, our legal team is on it. They're working right now to fight that battle using the First Amendment as our major argument.
Yeah, and importantly, we should note that they said the customer list was the only thing compromised. So the hackers don't have that 3 billion plus and growing image archive. But you're right, Matt, legal troubles gather like storm clouds on the horizon. Clearview has said it's complied with things like policies proposed by the ACLU. The ACLU has said that they don't comply. And I think there's a case coming up against Clearview in Illinois, and it's one of what may be many. Arguably, legal troubles should be gathering on the horizon, and the storm should hit, especially when we look at the implications of this technology. And before we continue, we want to be like cartoonishly transparent here. We're not saying that Clearview or the people in the startup are bad people. And we're not saying even that their intentions are bad. We're saying that this technology, just like any other technology, has inherent implications. Just like fire, it has some positive benefits and it has some very dangerous possible consequences. Like, how could it be misused? The first one, just off the top here, the first one is the one we talked about a couple times in this episode. Somebody with access could use it for personal reasons. We did that hypothetical cop who's, you know, mad at his ex for dating Mark McGillicuddy or whatever. But we can go beyond the hypothetical examples. There's a real life example. There's a billionaire Clearview investor who used the app to stalk his daughter's newest beau. He wanted to find out about this guy. I imagine, you know, whether you're a millionaire or a pauper, you of course you want to know who your kid's dating. You want to know about them, but it's crazy that this guy was able to use it, and he found out all the stuff that we just mentioned, like where the guy lives, what his job is, you know, his known connections, his social media and stuff. This example is a little weird though, because I imagine being a billionaire, you could just hire a person to dedicate their time to doing that. Just hire a PI.
This is a really important thing about this that we mentioned, but we didn't get into it. The reason why he was able to find all that stuff about this person, the way I've seen the software work, it's not like you identify this person that it gives you a giant readout of all of this person's information. You identify that person's face, then all of the other publicly available on the internet faces show up, and you can click on it and it takes you to the website where that face is, where that image is located. So that means you're then directly connected to their social media, to anywhere that photo has been posted. And then through those other websites, you can gather all that other information. At least that's the way it was demonstrated in that CNN business interview and a couple of other places.
That's the way it works for now. But we know that UI could easily be upgraded to maybe scrape that information if it's publicly available, right? I mean, think about how many things we've talked about before, how easy it is to find a phone number, how easy it is to find not just your address, but the last few addresses you lived at over the years. This is weird. We should also mention people don't trust Clearview AI. It's a little bit of stereotyping, but they don't trust it because one of the investors, Peter Thiel, is also big in Facebook. Facebook is good at a lot of things, and users' privacy has never been one. And that is not a bug. That's a feature, from their opinion.
Well, and this is just to dovetail on all of that. In that interview, Donnie O'Sullivan does a search of his face, and it's the official profile picture on the website where he works for the CNN business site. And when they scrolled all the way down, there was an image of him, because he's in his, late 30s or something to that. I don't know how old he is, but he's a person about our age, Ben and Noel and I. They scroll all the way down, and there's an image of him from a local newspaper where he was in Ireland.
Right.
When he was 16 years old. And it's a group of, you know, teenagers holding up a sign, and you can just see his face, and he looks absolutely different. I mean, I would not have been able to tell that was him, but he recognized the photo, and he knew it was him. Mm-hmm. And this is the kind of thing where, you know, this is not an allegation on my part. This is just me wondering and ruminating. I'm wondering how they connected that up, how this face recognition software inserted that picture of him where he looks so different. And the founder says, well, you know, there's still parts of your face, the geometry of it, that remain the same over the years, even if you put on weight, even if you're wearing glasses, even if you're covering your face. I get that argument, but it makes me wonder if there is some kind of added, like, Spokio search that's going on within this system where you're looking at, that's just another company that you can search social media, any social media accounts that somebody has using an email or a phone number or a name. And it makes me wonder if they're connecting things up there as an extra layer of
data. Like a name, like prioritizing an image by other information.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me wonder if that's happening. I guess not, but I would say the founder didn't sufficiently explain how that image got in there. And the interviewer is clearly a little weirded out and disturbed by it.
Well, another thing too is, I mean, you know, in the United States, presumably, you might be identified using this technology, but it doesn't mean you are immediately going to be convicted of something without some kind of physical evidence or without a trial. But in other countries where stuff like that isn't as much of a thing, it could be used to identify social dissidents or like people that are speaking out against a totalitarian government and flag them and throw them in the gulag or whatever, you know, without ever, you know, batting an eye. And that is sort of the crux of the problem with this software, is it depends on the notion of people that use it being good actors and being good stewards of this power that they have. And as we know, power corrupts, and we've got a lot of governments that are kind of corrupt and out to shut down any kind of criticism of what they do. And this would be a great way to identify those people and round them up and put them away.
Yeah. And it's dangerous for that reason. You know, you could detain people and you could cut around some of their legal protections. Like what if this counted in a court of law as definitive identification? Then you would say, well, we don't need to figure out if you're the person, right? It could get so dangerous so quickly. There's another point we have to add. You know, this sounds like some kind of Skynet Big Brother stuff. It can also be used inaccurately. It is far from perfect. There's one thing that I've been talking a lot about with some people online about. Facial recognition has an inherent racial bias that I wish more people talked about. For non-white people, for persons of color, this stuff lags in accuracy. Not just Clearview, but in general, facial recognition is known for this. And this means that you could be arrested due to a computer error because the software decided that you look like a guy you never met, who lives in a state you've never been to, who committed a crime that occurred while you were not alive. And it could happen. It could happen here.
And to continue with that, we mentioned, you know, the people that were known to be using this software, the organizations, and two of them, or three of them, let's just point these out. Department of Justice, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Let's just leave it at those two. So take the problems you're talking about, Ben, that are inherent to this system. Apply that then to, let's say, Immigrations and Customs, looking for people who are in the United States illegally. And imagine that you're attempting to round everyone up. The implications of this software would be extremely effective, I would say, or completely ineffective because they're detaining and rounding up people incorrectly because of the problems with the software.
Well, think about this too. The problems with the software. So they compound on the state level, but they compound on the private level too. And this is one that I think for the immediate future is at least as dangerous as the Orwellian stuff we're talking about right now. So that data, when it's mined, right, just like your data on any other social media, it can be sold to third parties. insurance companies, financial institutions, and so on. This goes way past ads. The phrase, I know I'm kind of churchifying here, but the phrase I think of is a longitudinal profile of your face and your behavior over time. So it's like watching a real life progression of you aging. And the let's say that an insurance company or an algorithm could start to pick up on certain medical conditions that are manifesting in your face in very minuscule ways, ways a human being and even a human doctor wouldn't sense. The computer picks this up before you know anything's wrong. Sort of like the way Target's algorithms figured out that poor girl was pregnant before her family knew. So here's the question. Would the insurance company legally be required to notify you of this possible health condition? Say like there's clearly something happening, maybe if they have video too, in your behavior that is indicative of an early onset terminal condition. Would they be legally required to tell you that they knew you had a, let's say, 80% chance of dying in the next 2 years and give you the assistance you need? Right now, that's a nope. That is a big no, Chief. They don't have to do a damn thing for you. What they can do with absolutely no repercussions is say, hey, this person's probably going to be dead in 2 years and it's going to be expensive to get them to year two. So let's just drop them. Let's just drop them. There's no law that there's no like ethical legal requirement for them to tell you what they know. And that's mind-boggling. That is reprehensible. That is like, I need to get my good non-abridged thesaurus to come up with all the different words for how bad and disturbing that is.
Oh, Ben, I love it when you do that because I always learn a new word.
Did you guys ever, just to lighten the mood, did you guys ever hear that old joke about the abridged thesaurus? It's like, I have an abridged thesaurus. Not only is it terrible, it's terrible. That's so dumb. I didn't write that, but you can. The good news is, right now, depending on where you live, you can opt out of Clearview.
Oh my gosh! But even the way you opt out isn't like it's such a burden. It's such a burdensome process. You can't just click a box in an email, right? All you have to do is send a headshot. Do we all have those? And an image of your government issued ID, and this only applies also to residents of California or the EU for whatever reason. Sorry, rest of the world, right?
Jeez. Because of the privacy laws that exist there.
Yeah. We should also point out, going back to this accuracy thing, there are serious questions about how accurate Clearview is in general. So BuzzFeed, according to marketing literature they found from Clearview, says that the company touts the ability to find a match out of 1 million faces 98.6% of the time. But when Clearview did finally start talking to the New York Times, they said the tool produces a match up to 75% of the time, and we don't know how many of those are quote-unquote true matches. So there's some contradictory information that's coming out, which can make people feel uncomfortable, obviously, and that's where we leave today. The battle lines are firming up. On one side, you have Clearview, its investors, its clients, and what I would call the techno-optimist, right? On the other side, you have privacy advocates, you have tech giants like Microsoft, IBM, you even have the Pope. The Pope came out against facial recognition, and he summed it up pretty nicely. He said, quote, "This asymmetry, by which a select few know everything about us, while we know nothing about them, dulls critical thought and the conscious exercise of freedom."
Imagine applying that to a priest who hears confessions from everyone every week when they go and tell their dirty secrets. The priest is then the one who everybody knows nothing about, but he knows everything about them. Just putting it out there. Especially, hey, and also, this thing is targeting child sex abuse and abusers. Just also leaving that there.
Yeah. Oh, one other thing. For anyone listening along and thinking, good thing I made my profile on insert social media here private years ago. Sorry, homie. Anything that was public at some point is pretty much in the system, even if you later made it private. So check your MySpace.
in that CNN business interview, as you said, Ben, they test out the software on the producer who has a private Instagram account, and images from that account show up in the search. And it is because it was public at one point.
And that's where we leave off today. What do you think, fellow conspiracy realists? Do the benefits outweigh the potential consequences of this? Do the consequences outweigh the potential benefits? Let us know. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Twitter. We always like to recommend our Facebook community page. Here's where it gets crazy.
Yeah, you can jump on there. You can talk about this episode or any other in the past. You can post some dank memes, let's say some conspiracy memes or facial recognition stuff. Maybe you've had access to this before, to Clearview, and you want to talk to us about it. Don't do that on Facebook. Don't do that. But if you do want to tell us about that, you can call our number. We are 1-833-STDWYTK. You can leave a message there, tell us about it, let us know if you don't want to be identified, if you don't want us to know or talk about anything on air. Just let us know, give us the information. We'd love to hear from you.
And I want to add to this to say that I finally start, despite my strange phobia regarding phones, I started diving in. Matt, you're doing massive, amazing work there. And I've started listening to these calls as well. Thank you so much to everyone who calls in. It's inspiring. And I don't know about you. I don't know about you guys, but it makes me feel like what we're doing is worthwhile, if that makes sense.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I've had, you know, hopefully you're going to, if you could get past the phobia, Ben, hopefully you can call a few people, because you can use that app and you should be good to go. Actually speaking to you know who you are if we've talked on the phone, it means a great deal, as Ben is saying, just to us to know that we're not just talking in a darkened room, and that you guys care about us as much as we care about you. So this is a great relationship. Let's keep doing it.
Well said, Matt. Well said. And we'll be following up with some of those messages in the future. So keep them coming. One last thing. If you say, look, Ben's right, phones are terrifying and weird, but also social media. You guys just told me how dangerous that is. Why on earth? What gives? I have a story that my fellow listeners need to know about. I have some experience. I have some terrible jokes to tell you, but I don't know how to contact you. Well, we have good news for you. You can always 24/7 contact us at our good old-fashioned email, where we are
conspiracy@iheartradio.com. Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.